Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to the filibuster here on the Nerd Party. People make Glasgow. That's what it says. People also make Glasgow film festivals. And Lee and I were at the film festival this past week, although stepping off the train, we could have been mistaken for thinking that we were in an entirely different city, Gotham City, because the Glasgow Film Festival happened to tie in at the same time that Batgirl was filming as well. Why is Batgirl filming in Glasgow? Well, it appears that following the success of The Batman in choosing a scuzzy, grimy, horrible location to represent Gotham on the big screen, Glasgow is the place to go if you want to be in Gotham. So, Lee, let's sort of dive straight into the festival and also in Gotham. I mean, what was it like being back to the Glasgow Film Festival for the first time since March 2020, long time ago.
Yeah, it was a throwback. And even then, that kind of festival, I'd only got to see a couple that year. And I think the one thing I would remember about 2020, if someone went, what did you catch that year? What sticks in my head is what I didn't see, that I didn't go to the surprise movie that night, which was Promising Young Woman. And then I had to wait almost, 18 months to see this movie that was due out mere weeks later. So yeah, that was a huge regret from kind of 2020 for me, was that I didn't go to that surprise movie, which was something I was keen to rectify this year.
Did you ever actually get to see Promising Young Woman on the big screen, or no?
Nah, I watched it on a screener and then I bought a digital copy, so no.
It ended up going out on Sky Cinema or something like that. And so basically, it might have been the only public screening of Promising Young Woman was the surprise screening, so quite a feat. So, I mean, we discussed on a couple of weeks ago about our sort of most anticipated films for the festival. I mean, did you end up sort of catching any of those, and did any manage to live up to, I say, the initial hype, but essentially the eye-catching blurb that was written on the website?
No, I didn't get the chance to see too much this year. There are films I can talk about that I've seen at other festivals that's made its way to Glasgow, which is good. But no, unfortunately not. It was one of those ones where kind of life got in the way a little bit. I've been so busy with work, and then I've been away for the weekend, and then the past weekend, I was finally a weekend to almost just catch up and take a breather. And, you know, it was one of those things, I kind of took a look at my Letterboxd list, where I was like, God, you know, I must have been watching something, at least anything, you know, that I can say, oh, I haven't waded through these pile of screeners to discover I had watched an episode of Star Trek Picard in that time. I watched one random screener, and I ended up going to see a film last night, which wasn't even the closing movie of the Glasgow Film Festival, but that was Red Rocket, which was part of the festival at least, but I caught it a week later. So unfortunately, I hadn't plans even to see that last night, but I was having a pretty miserable day, so I ended up going to see it with a friend. So yeah, I'm a bit disappointed. I've not been able to kind of get going with watching kind of much in the way of screeners this year for the festival.
I mean, sort of, I guess on that sort of topic, I mean, you went to Sundance London last year, and then you were down in London for the London Film Festival in person. I mean, this was, you know, a return to in-person festivals for Glasgow, but a large percentage of the press screenings were available via the digital platform. I mean, how much did that sort of lean into your sort of decisions on maybe what you were initially planning to watch, or even say like scheduling time to go through to Glasgow and stuff, given that there was this, certainly for press, this hybrid split between in-person and sort of digital? Did it affect your decisions?
Probably did. Like, I think these hybrid models are fantastic for people. Like, I, you know, it's something people have been demanding for years, you know, access to sort of these screeners, people that can dial into the festival remotely, people with health conditions that perhaps make it difficult for them to go to the festival. I think things like that are just huge advantages, but it's not my personal cup of tea. Like, you know, I think in previous festivals that have kind of gone virtual, life hasn't been as busy, so it's been quite easy to sit down and go, I'm kind of in isolation or lockdown, you know, what could I do tonight? Oh, you know, I've got a bunch of screeners, let's watch them. And that kind of goes. But now with so much of kind of life getting back in the way again, like concerts returning, you know, work increasing, just basic kind of commitments, being able to see friends again, the time to sort of sit down in front of like a computer and watch movies is kind of passing. Like, I prefer the opportunity to go and see the films in the cinema, and it makes it, and it's just the time vanishes off. Like, by the time I finish a day, I feel exhausted at the moment, and the idea of like an extra couple of hours watching something on a laptop feels difficult. And I spoke about it with a friend recently, where it's so difficult at the moment, where we think back to 2020 or other, you know, previous festivals, where we think, you know what, they're tiring, but you know, you go to a festival, you see your friends, and then maybe you go see Hamilton in the evening, maybe you go to a concert, you do a load of things. And nowadays it seems like balancing and juggling work life, doing things, you were like, how did I ever have the energy to do that before? And something ultimately has to give, and that for me has been kind of watching films, which has been a bit disappointing when it's there just to log in away. You know, I'm really aware that I'm privileged, but perhaps it's just been a sort of a learning curve that it's harder to stay on that when you're juggling full-time job and a life in between.
Yeah, I mean, I keep doing the same thing every single time that a virtual festival comes along, in that I think that I will be able to fit it in. I won't take any time off. I'll be able to fit it in around work. You know, I'll get up 6-7 o'clock. I'll fit a screener in before work. I might take a longer lunch, catch one then, catch a couple in the evening. And then somehow then, you know, be able to find time to fill in some reviews and stuff like that. But the same thing happens every single time. And that, you know, I will watch films, but, you know, I potentially might get distracted, or I will end up with the inevitable backlog of reviews of, I've managed to watch films, but I haven't had time to write anything, and I've got sort of 6 sort of waiting there. And, you know, I am, some people, you know, famously, I think it's Alex Billington, is a famous blog rant about embargoes at film festivals. I, for one, appreciate the embargo, because the screenings are several days in advance, and I am quite happy to not have that immediate pressure to put up an opinion and write just a half-assed review. I like time to sort of sit and think about it and file it away. So that is good. However, again, you know, there always will be, you end up having a backlog and stuff like that. You know, credit to Glasgow again for having the 72-hour window to watch a film, which is always nice. Not all the screenings were captioned from what I could see, but a large proportion were. So again, for accessibility, that was good. But it's something which I really do need to, I mean, I have booked my travel for Venice now. I haven't got accreditation yet, but I've booked my travel, because basically that's the thing that always gets most expensive, so I'll sort that out later. But yeah, but Venice, you know, that's going to be like 3.5 days of, yep, getting up probably 6 in the morning, walking over, getting the water taxi across to the Lido, 4 or 5 films in a day, come back, write my reviews, go to bed, eat, sleep, repeat, do that. Fantastic. That's what I love. When you're doing something which is a hybrid or whatever, it does sort of take away that. And like I think they say, it's part of the, you know, the meeting up with people and stuff like that, because, you know, we met up for the surprise film, and we betrayed our usual pizza place and went over to Thundercat, which I have to say, I'm becoming more of a convert to deep dish pizzas. If anyone has in the UK has ever had a Chicago Town deep dish pizza, it is basically a lie. It is, you know, it's one of these crappy microwavable things. It is a pale imitation of the real thing. And, you know, people said, you know, it said sharing, we were dubious, but yeah, I think we're glad that we shared. But it was nice to be able to do that. And I had one day off for the festival, so I came down, got the train down, and so I was able to catch up with the reviews. Was able to check into a hotel, write another review, watch a couple of films. So I watched Happening, checked in, wrote a review, walked through the back door filming, checking my calendar, thinking, I'm pretty sure that when I checked into my hotel it was March, but when I came out all the Christmas lights were on, as I'm suddenly back in December. And then, you know, we did that, then watched the surprise film, and then in the morning got the very early train back up, but was able to catch up with another couple of reviews. So that's the kind of festival life I enjoy. I, like I say, you know, the accessibility and the chance to see things virtually is fantastic. You know, you can do both, but yeah, I think for me it will always be, nothing beats the in-person one. And, you know, we've got Edinburgh announced their dates during the middle of the festival. There was, I think it's going to be 12th to the 20th of August, which is a slight reduction in time. They're going for 9 days instead of the normal sort of 12, and they are 100% now moving back into the rest of the Edinburgh Festival period. They'd originally moved to June several years ago to try and distinguish themselves from everywhere else. I mean, I'll get your thoughts on that in a second, but we're getting back into in-person ones, so I will definitely have to make a few days to come down to Edinburgh for that. And we've got London coming up as well, which I think, I mean, we discussed it on a podcast where it was like, I think London, you do need to experience that one in person, given the fact that virtual attendees and in-person attendees paid the same price for their passes, and we virtual attendees only got about 25% of what people were able to see in person. So, you know, in person is best, virtual is nice, but I always must write a note for any film festival that says take a couple of days off just to catch up, process, and just enjoy them without you know, sort of clock watching and going, I really need to get back to work in 5 minutes and stuff like that. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to a future like that.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess, you know, you didn't see much at the festival, but I guess we can talk about the surprise film, which we both watched. It's not a surprise anymore. It was The Novice, directed by Lauren Hadaway, which originally screened last year at the Tribeca Film Festival. Obviously, you know, a lot of people were discussing going in, what was it going to be? Was it going to be The Phantom of the Open? Was it going to be X? Was it going to be The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent? Was it going to be, you know, there's lots of options running around. And I think I maybe mentioned this one when I was sort of scanning through the upcoming film release schedule during dinner. But even then I was like, could be, I guess it kind of fits in date wise, but I don't think this was one which nobody had talked about prior in advance. And, you know, Alison Gardner, director of the Edinburgh Film, the Glasgow Film Festival herself, said that she's not a fan of the surprise film. She appreciates what it does. I mean, you know, it got a basically sold out audience to it. But she was like, if you don't like the film, don't tweet me. I don't care. So, I mean, what did you make of this decision? Because it was hinted at that it was potentially not their first choice and that something sort of fell by the wayside a couple of weeks ago. I appreciate that. I think a lot of the films that people were talking about were getting their world premieres at Sundance South by Southwest, which basically ruled them out. But I mean, what did you make of the final selection?
Yeah, it was an interesting one where I think, as you say, I never heard anyone talk about this as a potential surprise movie. You know, people were starting to almost get like deep into the thought of like, well, it could be this, and what about this as a potential option, etc.
Morbius, but Sonic 2.
Yeah, no one mentioned The Novice. And I remember thinking, Dallas is on the ball. You were sat next to me and it was just like the first logo that flashed up was Vertigo. Like, I had a similar reaction, like when it was like, come on, the London Film Festival's prize winner, the Issue Day 24, I was like, phew, it's come on. And this is like, how did Dallas get that straight away? And I never realised until afterwards that you'd already seen it. I didn't think it was a particularly great film, but kind of my day-to-day job is working in sort of the field of autism. And it was one of those things, like the film 100% doesn't say it, but I think it heavily implies that this character is autistic, you know, whether it's her hyper-focused, you know, perhaps like how she interacts with individuals. I saw a lot of traits of the type of people I work with or advocate on behalf of. And yeah, I watched that movie and I thought, oh, this is interesting in a work perspective, what it's kind of ticking. And I thought it was really interesting representation of that community in a film I would maybe recommend to people, or, you know, and I have done so since. But in terms of a film, I was like, you know, it's difficult because, you know, I think there's almost an entitlement that comes with a surprise film that it's got to be something specifically interesting or exciting. I mean, it can always be a bit of a mixed bag, these things. That's the joy and surprise of these things. I will never complain afterwards going, oh, it was this film and not this film, for example. So, you know, it was fine. It was just, it wasn't really necessarily my cup of tea. I thought it was, had some interesting stuff going for it, but ultimately, you know, it was kind of like a, yeah, that was fine, and so on. I think sometimes you can feel the mood afterwards. Admittedly, I was rushing off to a train, but you know, sometimes you get it where it's, whether it's a spontaneous clap afterwards or the buzz of people, you know, going, oh, that was brilliant, I didn't expect that, oh, I need to tell someone about this. I think this is a sort of film that you can't imagine getting much in the way of a cinema release, and you'll see maybe if it pops up on Prime one day. I just think this film's not going to have much in the way of sort of any real impact, but some really good star performances though.
Yeah, no, I'd seen this one back at Tribeca, and I think my only wish for the surprise film was that it was something that I hadn't seen already, which was why I was hoping with every fibre of my being that it was not Phantom of the Opera, because we'd seen it at a press screening the week before, and you know, it was the kind of thing which would, you know, play very well with a certain type of audience. And I was like, but then I thought, it can't be that, because more often than not, the Glasgow Film Festival surprise film is something, I think they call them like The Voices, Promising Young Women. I think the year that The Beast from the East cancelled, it was going to be Unsane. So they always go for a slightly edgier one. So, I mean, this totally fits with the brief of that. It's just that, yeah, I knew what it was, but, you know, I wasn't on an aisle. So I'll watch it again. If it had been Phantom of the Open, I think we both said that we were going to just get up and walk out. But, I mean, the surprise film is certainly one, is different to the Cineworld secret unlimited screenings, where people do have that sense of entitlement or something, where they, I mean, fair play to Cineworld for trolling the audience, but they always seem to program a secret screening around about the time of a release of like a Marvel film or a Star Wars film, and people are like, oh, it's going to be this, and it's like everyone in the who should know would be like, it's never going to be that. But, you know, wishful thinking. I mean, still remember the time that they thought was going to be The Force Awakens, and it was in the heart of the sea. And it was just like, yeah, these people walking out. You know, fair enough, nobody walked out of the of this one. You know, it's, for me, it's, you know, Isabel Furman is fantastic in it. It is very much sort of Black Swan Whiplash with rowing. But, you know, I think it's a very, really sort of fascinating, committed performance by her. And, yeah, I think if it wasn't for her, it would be very forgettable. But I think she does enough to get it over the finishing line. For me, I would have ended it probably like a minute before it actually does on the Strike of Lightning. I would have ended it there. I think it would have been a better film for it. But, yeah, that's just me. But then, you know, it would have been very, very similar to every single other one of those films about somebody who's obsessed with perfection and striving to be the best, and then it's, you know, ultimately to their own detriment. But, you know, I think it was interesting to watch in the cinema as well, because, you know, the sort of the sound mix and editing was interesting. And also the one of the funniest moments I think I've had in the screen recently was the character of Alex Dahl has her first sexual encounter at college, and it's over in, I think, around about sort of 5 to 10 seconds, and there was a large ripple of laughter, yet it was only from the women, which I found quite interesting. That they were like, yeah, and all the men were like, I don't know why they're laughing, what was that supposed to mean? So, yeah, I mean, it was a fine film. It clearly wasn't what people were probably wanting, i.e. the Nick Cage film or X or something like that, but it was still a good film. And I mean, that's the risk you take, isn't it, with a surprise film? You know, it could be something you've already seen, especially, you know, with us attending film festivals and getting advanced screeners and stuff like that. Obviously, the risk of us having seen something like that is far greater than the average Joe public, so, you know, you've got to take the rough with the smooth, and, you know, it was fine. But I guess we'll be back on it next year, or actually in October with the London one as well. So, I mean, I have totaled it up. I managed to see 13 films across the festival with a variety of screeners. I mean, there was a lot of threes. There was a few fours. Top hits for me would probably be The Outfit. I went into that not expecting much and was actually really pleasantly surprised by it. Happening, the Venice Film Festival winning one about abortion in France in the 60s. I thought that was very, very good. There was an absolutely like eye-poppingly shocking moment in it. I was just like, wow, I really didn't expect to see that. And neither did anyone else in the screen, it would seem, as well. And the young actress who is in this, I completely forget her name now, but she reminded me of a young Marion Cotillard. I think it was because a lot of the time in several scenes she was wearing like a pink tank top, and it reminded me of Marion Cotillard wearing that in the sort of 2 days, one night film where she is also struggling with a personal problem. Nitrum as well, the Australian film about a gun massacre in Tasmania, that was fantastic. In terms of, you know, the worst things I've seen at the festival, there was one particular film which, you know, I'm not going to stick the boot, I'm not going to name it, but it was easily the worst film that I saw at this festival, and to be honest, probably several other film festivals since I've been attending as press in the last sort of 4 years. Yeah, it's
had good camera angles though.
Yeah, when reviews have to talk about lighting and camera angles, you are reaching, and that was from a 2-star review as well. So you know, I don't want to stick the boot in too much because I've never made a film, so, you know, if I ever made a film, would it be any good? I don't know. But, yeah, you know, full credit to them for trying, but, you know, it just didn't work for me, and from what I can gather, several others. But, you know, they would have got their big moment at the film festival, so that's good, I think. So, yeah.
Yeah, I caught a few films, and when I say I caught a few films, I watched them in the past few months at other festivals and screeners, but made their way to Glasgow. One film I particularly enjoyed was Bergman Island, Mia Hansen Love's film. So, yeah, she can sometimes be a bit hit or miss, but this film seems to have kind of captured people's imaginations. Like, Mia Hansen Love's interesting because she makes quite a lot of films, but not all of them seem to make their way to the UK or out for release. Like, I remember watching a film of hers about sort of 2-3 years ago at the London Film Festival, Maya, which was sort of about this like Indian woman that sort of like goes sort of like on a bit of a tour of India. I've never seen that made its way to the cinema so far, but I would highly recommend Bergman Island to watch with fans of cinema so that they can actually cringe in their seat at probably how most of the world views them when they're talking about films. Also, it contains the best needle drop that people will see this year. And obviously Red Rocket, I won't expand too much on that because I think I've spoken about it nonstop for quite a while now, but you know, our latest episode of the A24 project came out this week, where we sort of dived into the film, and we also sort of preview some interviews we've got with a couple of the cast members coming up, which is good. And obviously The Worst Person in the World, so that's out a week on Friday from Mubi and into cinema. So it's about sort of the 4 years in the life of sort of Julie, this young woman, classic sort of quarter life crisis, you know, relationships and all the failures that go in with them. A very, very good movie, but I think is in danger of becoming a bit overhyped, and I'm getting a bit sick of it. So one of these films where you really enjoy, but you almost at the same time feel that you need to mute on Twitter as well. So yeah, I caught a couple. Wish I'd certainly seen more, but you know, plenty more festivals to come, and certainly one very local one coming in a few months.
Yeah, I do need to catch Bergman Island. Annoyingly, that was one of the ones that I only had a in-person press screening, so yeah, I've missed that to London and this one now, but that one I expect will get a release at some point. But yeah, I guess is it the Anders Danielsson Lee, because he's in both of those films, isn't he? Worst Person in the World, yeah. So yeah, he was and he was at the festival, so he was having quite a moment there, which is good. But yeah.
I just had a wee look, it was $9.99 on iTunes a few weeks ago in the run up to the festival, already back up to $6.
Well, I'll catch it at some point. But yeah, no, I know what you mean exactly about Worst Person in the World. I think the problem is that one when did that one initially come? Was that Cannes or Venice? But then it was at London. And then, yeah, I think the fact that it's not out until... Is it out this month or is it May? I can't remember. Or is that happening? It's been a long time since the hype train start on that one. And it feels like it could peter out before the film finally gets released. And the fact that anyone who is interested in seeing it will have actually seen it before it actually hits cinemas. So. Yeah, no, so I mean, it was overall, I mean, you know, it's I guess it's difficult for you to rate this Glasgow Film Festival, given that you didn't have the chance to watch much, but I think you probably got to praise their customer service because you did actually get a "Are you okay?" sort of checkup email in the fact that you hadn't logged into your screening hub and they actually wanted to make sure that you were all right in. Which I thought was quite nice. It was like a duty of care almost on part of the festival.
Yeah, I've never had that before. And it was just like, no, I'm just really busy with work. I'm a bit tired. I've just been on a long weekend off, but I'm fine. I'm going to the surprise movie tonight. So yeah, I appreciate the thought. And as I say, these virtual platforms are fantastic for so many people. More people benefit from it than me, perhaps not gelling with it so well. So, you know, I'm really happy and I hope these things continue. You know, it's yeah, that's kind of the way these things should go, and certainly the future. It can only bring more coverage to Glasgow Film Festival, and it's a good option to have if you find yourself perhaps isolating or maybe having a week off, but perhaps become a bit more difficult. And sometimes that 72-hour window can be punishing, as great as it is to have you like, oh, I'll watch in like 2 days, 3 days, and then it passes and you're like, oh, I wanted to watch that movie.
But I mean, all credit to Glasgow for being able to, you know, pull it together, delivering a successful in-person festival. I know I was only down very briefly, but all the staff and volunteers were fantastic. You know, we got our tote bags again, which was like, yes. And I mean, that's the only reason, that's the main reason to go to a film festival. You've got to get a tote. Otherwise, were you even there if you didn't have a tote bag for the festival? So yeah, great to be back. We're looking forward to Edinburgh, London, stuff like that. And yeah, long may this hybrid working continue. I mean, we're going to be doing it in our work life. So yeah, festivals need to do that as well. But London, just a quick tip for you, if you are going down that route again, you've got to have two levels of payment. You know, we're very, very privileged here to be able to get free access to Glasgow and other festivals. London, you do have to pay, but I think you do need to have two levels, an in-person level and a virtual level in order to do that. So yeah, that's just my heads up to the London Film Festival for that one. But we'll be back soon with reviews of more films that are coming out that you'll be able to watch soon. It's getting close to that time. The time when I'm going to have to see if Lee's up for watching a double bill of Morbius and Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
But I'm very much up for Sonic the Hedgehog 2. I'm of that generation, so we are 100% getting Kim in on that one. Notice I did miss out one of the films there.
Absolutely. But yeah, we'll get Kim on for that one. And actually, I was walking past an Oxfam bookshop yesterday, and I saw what potentially could have been a great crossover one for us and Kim. It was a Batman graphic novel that featured Batman and Robin teaming up with Scooby-Doo to solve crimes.
Oh, everyone's teamed up with Scooby-Doo, haven't they?
We haven't yet, but maybe in a future episode. Anyway, we'll catch you later. Bye.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.